Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charters. Purdue's training camp is scheduled, perhaps was scheduled, to start on Friday, but the Big Ten has yet to release a schedule, and the commissioner has hedged a bit on whether football will be played this fall. Player opt-outs, player demands, all topics coming up on Golden Black Radio. Kyle Charters here with Tom Dienhart. Talk a little bit of Big Ten hoops and Purdue basketball recruiting with Brian Newbert in a couple of minutes as well. You know, Tom, I was thinking this morning it would be nice if we could get to one of these podcasts where we would debate who's going to start at left guard, maybe who the backup center is, talk a little bit of football before the start of training camp. But instead, we're still spinning our wheels here a little bit with whether this thing will start, with what the Big Ten schedule will look like, what the threshold is for players testing positive and continuing to field a team and play football games. I mean, all questions we don't know the answers to. We'll try to speculate on them, though, a little bit right now.
You're wearing me out, Kyle. Wearing me out. I mean, I know the questions come at everybody hard and fast, don't they? We all want answers. Nobody can really give us definitive answers, just a lot of speculation and conjecture, which I guess is understandable. I don't know, my friend. You know, Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren sent a letter to every school on July 30th, last Thursday, saying that they were going to continue to evaluate their health and safety protocols, wanting to make sure everything's buttoned up and safe before they begin camp. And like you said, that was beginning. It was supposed to be this Friday. Well, again, that appears to be on hold, and so does the schedule for the conference as well, although I think maybe we'll see that released this week. So stay tuned. Those questions have to be answered still. And, Kyle, what a big weekend with talk of maybe Pac-12 schools opting out, or Pac-12 players opting out on the season. You know, there's also going to be a vote this Thursday by the NCAA if they're going to cancel their fall championships. And now let's talk about the Power Five maybe breaking away from the NCAA if that happens. So, again, a lot going on, buddy.
Yeah. It's like every day there's more questions and fewer answers, which is a problem. And like I said, I'd love to just sit here and debate Plummer versus O'Connell with you. Perhaps we'll get to that at some point before the start of the season. You know, that Big Ten schedule will come out at some point. It's your feeling, right, Tom, that still we're looking at September 5th as an opener?
Yeah, but that may be dimming now, obviously, if training camp continues to get delayed, Kyle. You know, maybe the Pac-12 has the template that the Big Ten will adapt. Late last week, that conference unveiled its 10-game schedule, and they're not going to start till September 19th. So, that typically would be week three in the season. That leaves you less wiggle room, Kyle. Pac-12 is going to try to play 10 games over 11 weeks. Originally, when this schedule was changed, they wanted schedule flexibility to be able to move games around. Games have to get canceled. The idea, maybe play 10 games over 13 or 14 weeks. So, again, time's running short. Decisions are going to have to be made soon by the Big Ten. So teams know when they can go to camp, and of course they can start prep for that first game.
There is some argument to be made that camp should start, because it usually does, before the start of school, so that you can have those practices throughout the day, team meetings, all of that kind of stuff. But also because it does allow you at least some ability to quarantine your players a little bit, at least for those 2 weeks of training camp. If the season gets delayed, that won't happen then, right? I mean, they will be in training camp at the same time that they're also supposed to be going to class, which presents multiple issues, it seems like.
Yeah, that very well could be the case. I think August 24th is the first day of classes at Purdue. So, yeah, ideally, schools want to have their camp finished before classes start. But, again, they keep kicking the can down the road on the start to training camp. You know, it could end up bleeding into the start of classes at Purdue. So, again, that's another conundrum that's going to have to be dealt with. And, you know, right now it looks like Purdue and a lot of schools have a pretty good handle on their COVID numbers. You know, Purdue releases theirs every Friday. But the X factor, as you and I know, Kyle, I'm sure all the listeners are well aware, is what happens when the players actually buckle up their chin straps and get out there and practice actual football in pads, number one. Number two, Kyle, the biggest X factor at all, what happens when 40,000 kids descend back to West Lafayette to start school and the players begin to mingle with those fellow students as they're going to class and just being normal students, where their COVID numbers go up. So the true, I guess, test is going to be unveiled in a few weeks, like I said, when they actually start practicing and all the kids get back.
Yeah, and the thing that, you know, I always question every week when Purdue releases those numbers, and I'm glad that Purdue does do that, but I don't know if it's good or bad. Like, yeah. Are those
contacts
seem
right?
good,
context.
Right? I mean, the numbers yeah. seem good in relation to other schools, and Purdue hasn't had to shut down any of its athletic programs like some other schools have. So the numbers seem okay, but the question I have is, what is the threshold for continuing to practice? And then what is the threshold for playing a game? And then you're talking about two sets of teams, too, each Saturday. So, you know, both teams would have to meet whatever that threshold is to be able to play the football game. I mean, I just don't know. So I see that every Friday. I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
seems
like
okay, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no real context. A lot of stuff to compare it to give you some perspective on, like you said, are those good or are those bad? And that gets to the beef of those Pac-12 players that have organized, Kyle. They want health and safety concerns, you know, buttoned up as possible. They're going to wade back into campus to play these games, and they've got issues with compensation, and it's a litany of issues that they've mandated or requested that were reported over the weekend. People can check out John Wilner's Twitter feed. He writes to the San Jose Mercury News, chronicling all very well. So you wonder, Kyle, if that's going to be a real threat if we see players en masse in the Pac-12 sit out the year. Will that trickle into other conferences, Kyle? Will we see elite players like Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, you know, Micah Parsons at Penn State, players like that sit out? I mean, I don't know. So that's a whole other X factor sort of hanging over the season. Just keep this in mind, too. Like I said, if we get to mid-August, teams are in camp, and all of a sudden there's a raft of infections across a lot of these campuses where the players start looking at each other and going, what are we doing out here? And then jump ship. I don't know. So there's a lot going on right now and a lot of possibilities that aren't pretty.
I think what we see happen is similar to what we've seen happen in MLB, in that days before games or a day before games, we will see cancellations or postponements of games, and you just won't know. I mean, I don't know what percentage of games that'll be on a weekly basis. I think they will try to play, and I think we'll see postponements or cancellations on a weekly basis of several games around the country that just simply won't be played. And I just think that's just a matter of fact. They just won't be played.
It's going to be tough, though. Football, if you lose 7 or 8 offensive linemen, I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough. From week to week. Baseball has their taxi squad. They can call players up, supposedly, and fill out their rosters. They haven't done that. I don't know why, but, you know, there's no free agent wire in college football where they can get Kyle, people like Kyle Charters off campus to give them a helmet and shoulder pads and throw them out there. So, who knows? We could sit here and talk for hours about different scenarios. I think August, this month, obviously, we're going to get a little bit more clarity on what's going on because, again, the clock continues to tick on the start of the season.
Yeah, I like to pretend that I'm still athletic. The reality of the situation, though, is something completely different, I think. So what do you think comes of all this Pac-12 stuff, right? I mean, Tom, you know, they've got some pretty hefty demands there. You've been a power to the players guy. What do you think comes of all that?
Well, see, they still haven't actually met with these schools or actually sent their demands directly to the schools yet. I'm not sure. I got a feeling it's all going to get worked out. There'll be some accord reached. Some of the demands right now are probably impossible, Kyle, honestly, to be met by the schools. Some of them are reachable. but I'm guessing, again, a compromise of some sort will be reached. But I still think, you know, we could still see some elite guys opt out on this season, especially if things begin to look more and more bleak. We saw the Virginia Tech cornerback, Caleb Farley, who's a projected first-round draft choice, make that decision already. Rayvon Bonner, the running back at Illinois. Kyle, NFL players are opting out left and right. I think the Patriots have had seven players already opt out. I know that's a different situation in the NFL. But, again, I don't know. I'm curious to see if, like I said, we'll get more college guys make that decision, too, in the next few weeks.
Yeah. You've got an opt-out story coming to the site, goldenblack.com, later today?
Yes, sir. Opt-out story. I talked to an NFL scout, talked to some coaches. I talked to an old Purdue player about it. So look for that today. I talked to the director of the Purdue All-American Marching Band. I'm going to have a story about the band and its plans for the 2020 season. Continuing also to look at Purdue's opponents in the Big Ten West this year. So I got a good chunk of content that's going to be flying hard and fast this week, my friend. So listeners can keep their eyes peeled for a lot of that stuff this week.
Next week, Tom, we'll debate who the starting left guard is. I promise you.
Let's do it. I'm looking forward to it, buddy. I'll begin my prep work as soon as we hang up.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Tom.
Take care, buddy.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Brian. A big week in Big Ten hoops. We'll do that coming up next on Gold and Black Radio.
Your neighborhood bar, Sixth Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's time to boiler up and join the Braum squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Kyle, with Brian, it was a big week in Big Ten basketball. Ayo Dosunmu, Kofi Coburn both returned to Illinois. Luke Garza back at Iowa. Brian, it's going to be, and we assume we'll play basketball this fall and winter, it's going to be a pretty good basketball season in the Big Ten.
It always should be, yeah. I mean, it's obviously one of the best leagues in the country, and it was last year, and it will be again this year. You know, they didn't get cleaned out by the NBA draft the way, you know, I think it was very possible at one point in time they could have been. When you look at the two guys you just mentioned at Illinois, and when you look at what Iowa has coming back, obviously the story of the Big Ten season last year to me was the reason the league was so strong was because the league flipped from one year to the next, where a couple of teams who weren't very good for a long stretch of time built really good teams, and they kind of backed up expectations. Illinois, Penn State, Rutgers kind of made the bottom of the league the top of the league and just made it an unbelievably competitive league outside of Northwestern and Nebraska. And now you look at Illinois, they come back almost entirely intact. You look at Rutgers comes back almost entirely intact. They kept their whole team together pretty much. And then obviously Penn State loses Lamar Stevens and whatnot, but it's a pretty deep league again. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at the Marylands and the Ohio States having to retool a little bit, but talent's never going to be the problem at those places. It's a pretty strong league. Wisconsin won the league that they have damn near their whole team back, I think. Obviously, Michigan State's always going to be good. Where Purdue and Indiana fit into this, we'll have to kind of wait and see. It won't be any sort of picnic, obviously, in Big Ten basketball again this year.
Were you surprised that any of those trio decided to come back?
I was surprised by the two Illinois kids, yeah, because I think both of those guys coming out of high school were fast-tracked to the NBA sorts of guys. And normally, even if you don't get to that point where it's the best decision for you, it's hard to override your lifelong expectations, you know, the expectations other people have of you, and kind of swallow your pride and go back. Also, you always run the risk, too, of hurting yourself by going back. You've seen that happen to players over the years, too, where Thomas Bryant comes to mind at Indiana a few years ago, where had he gone after his freshman year, you know, he's a guy who might have been a first round. It all worked out for him because he's turned into a really good pro, but he could have gone after his freshman year, and a lot of projections had him in the first round. He comes back to Indiana, maybe didn't have the great sophomore year everybody thought he'd have. People start picking you apart a little bit, whereas you've taken the unknown off the table and kind of illustrated your deficiencies in from an NBA perspective as much as you've underscored your strengths, and it hurts you. So sometimes it just makes sense to go, you know, after you've had a good year, after you won a lot of games like these two guys at Illinois did. So it did kind of surprise me both of those guys came back. But good for Illinois, you know. Life must be good in Champaign.
Must be. The regional perception probably of Purdue is that it's going to be down next year. It lost two of its starters from last season's team on a team that was mediocre, maybe to begin with. I tend to think that Purdue has a chance to be better next year than it was last year because I really like those incoming freshmen and the two guys that redshirted also, and feel like they can make a pretty good impact immediately. Is it good for Purdue to sort of be hanging back there and maybe not a whole lot of eyeballs on it when they're elsewhere like Illinois and Iowa and Michigan State, Wisconsin, Rutgers, places like that?
Yeah, well, Purdue has a lot to prove. I mean, obviously, they have to be more competitive. They have to be more mature. They have to benefit from struggling last season. And, you know, there is frame of reference for that at Purdue in the not-so-distant, you know, past. Purdue isn't going to be, you know, it isn't going to be that team everybody just automatically expects to be in the top three in the Big Ten, which they were last year, and perhaps maybe that wasn't the best thing for them because, you know, sometimes human nature is such where you just kind of assume just because something has happened every year, it's going to happen again. Now, obviously, that starts with your older players, and we talked all last year about how, you know, carrying things over had to start with the older guys, the guys who had won Big Ten titles, who had played in NCAA tournament games. It didn't. And, you know, part of that was the two upperclassmen, obviously, who are no longer around. Were they part of the problem? Yeah, I don't want to, you know, just totally throw them under the bus, but that's where it had to start, and it didn't. Now, could they have been part of the solution had they come back? Absolutely, they could have been, but we will never know. It's now up to these newcomers, and it's up to these juniors especially to, you know, kind of fix things, to get things back to where they were 2 years ago when Purdue obviously had won a bunch of games with a really good senior class and then went on and had an even better year the next year because, you know, to use one of those buzzwords, its culture had transcended the loss of that really good senior class. Now Purdue has to get it back to where it was, and that's kind of trickier than keeping it going. We're going to find out what, you know, the Eric Hunters and the Travion Williams and the Sasha Stefanoviches and the Aaron Wheelers learned about you know, this sort of topic last year, but also there's too many newcomers for them to not be, to not have a hand in this too. This is going to be a lot like, in the best case scenario, this is a lot like 2014, where you bring in a robust crop of newcomers who are good enough to play right away, but also mm-hmm. have the sort of substance and whatnot to them where they can be part of the solution from day one. The question then on paper is, who's your Rafael Davis? You know, who is the guy who kind of lights the match? And we don't know that yet. That's going to be up to these older guys coming back, presumably.
Let's talk a little bit of basketball recruiting. Brian, there was some news, of course, maybe not all that surprising news. Harrison Ingram narrows his list down to 6. He says that's the final list. Purdue included in that with Stanford, North Carolina, Harvard, Howard, and Michigan. I mean, that's, you know, expected sort of Purdue to be there, right? Now the fun begins, I guess, on which one of those 6 he ultimately chooses.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't any surprise about them making the top 6. This list could have gotten cut down like 2 or 3, and Purdue would have been on that. I'm quite certain. It's just a matter of now how he goes about, you know, sorting through all this stuff without potentially – without the prospect of being able to make visits. You know, the huge advantage Purdue has here is the fact that they got him in for a junior year official visit during the season. So he saw, you know, oftentimes Mackey Arena is a huge advantage for Purdue when it comes to recruiting. When you get players in Mackey Arena on a game night, I think you're going to have, on average, a better chance at that player than you would a lot of other players, because they've seen the best of Purdue. They've seen the best of Purdue basketball. They've seen, you know, that difference maker that it's game night environment can be. Now, he's been to Stanford too, and I can't remember if he's been to Stanford for a game, but the difference between a game at Purdue and a game at Stanford is, you know, the difference between West Lafayette and you know, the Bay Area. It's two different worlds. And you know, for Purdue, that's a huge advantage. Now, I'm taking a little bit for granted there and suggesting this comes down to Purdue and Stanford. That's kind of been the consensus all along. Obviously, there's some other very good schools here involved, but I think how he sorts through things from here on out, without being able to take visits, is going to be a challenge for him and every other player in the class of 2021 who's not yet committed. I mean, as we talked about from football and basketball perspectives here every week, the class of 2021 is just in an unprecedented situation in terms of having to decide on their schools. The good news is, you know, the junior year official visits have been something that have really helped Purdue since they've been implemented, and could be a real difference maker here too, because they got them in right before the world, you know, stopped turning.
Yeah. Purdue's in on some good players. Ingram, of course, Trey Kaufman. It has, you know, one guy and a good one, and Caleb First committed. Is there any, you know, smaller class, just a couple? Is there any chance, and I'm not suggesting Purdue gets all 3 of those guys, but is there any chance that Purdue would oversign by one here because, you know, they are in on guys and some others too and do have a smaller class?
Yeah, under normal circumstances, this would be a year where you would heavily consider that anyway. But when you look at the looming transfer reform going on with the NCAA right now, you know, it might be a situation where college basketball teams start oversigning every year because the assumption may be you're going to lose a guy every year simply because that's going to be the new conditions on the ground. Not that, you know, transfers weren't prevalent in men's basketball anyway before this, but now it might be musical chairs. As soon as this stuff passes, I've written about this 100 times because it is going to be chaos. It is going to be musical chairs, and that's the worst case scenario about all of this. For all the emotional equity people put into name, image, likeness, and players getting money, this is the biggest existential threat to one's connection to their team as anything, and one is related to the other, because if the NCAA just hadn't fought all of this stuff for years, they wouldn't be in a position where they're throwing this thing at players that nobody's even asking for. But now you're sitting right here, and you're just, you run the risk every year of the team you build a connection to just kind of disbanding on a whim. And I think that I've kind of gotten off topic here, but I think this looming transfer reform gives college basketball coaches every reason to oversign every year, but also potentially reason to undersign with big classes, because nobody is going to want a guy at the end of their bench not playing anymore, you know, because you don't want to put a year into a kid and then have him unhappy about his playing time and then leave, or sitting at the end of his bench, sitting at the end of your bench complaining and then leaving. I mean, it's just, it is, from a team dynamics perspective, this transfer reform is going to be a hand grenade in everybody's hand with the pin pulled out. It is going to be a mess, assuming it passes, which everybody seems to think it will.
Yeah. Well, let's leave it with that great imagery, the grenade. Thanks, Brian.
That was pretty good, wasn't it? A grenade
it was
in everyone's hand with the pin pulled out. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Right off the top of my
Thanks,
head.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
Yep. Bye.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll put a wrap on this podcast that's coming up next on Golden Black Radio. Golden Black Radio is brought to you by Home Field Apparel. Home Field makes premium collegiate apparel with vintage Purdue designs, with incredibly soft and comfortable clothing, printed and owned in Indianapolis. That's homefieldapparel.com for your premium Purdue apparel with vintage designs. And now, goldandblack.com branded apparel as well. Check it out today. The Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus is your experienced real estate group in Greater Lafayette. If you're looking to list, buy, sell, upsize, downsize, or anything else, give me a call or a text, 765-412-5217. Or email me at kyle@chartersteam.com. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish, and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
It'll be a big upcoming week in terms of Big Ten football news. How that impacts Purdue, check it out at goldandblack.com. All right, that'll do it for our podcast for this week. Thanks to our sponsors, Home Field Apparel, East End Grill, First Source Bank, Charters Team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, Follett's, the 6th Street Dive, and Purdue Federal Credit Union. Back again next Monday with the next podcast drop. You can listen to that however you listen to your podcast. For Tom Deanhart and Brian Newbert, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.